House Judiciary Committee on Subcommittee on Civil Laws in session. I apologize for the delay. Some of us were out pretty late last night, and getting a late start this morning. And I think there's been one addition to the white sheet, and that was Senate Bill 106, which will come before us on a reconsideration motion and probably the passage of another amendment to that bill. But I'm putting that at the bottom of the docket, so that's where that will rest. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2285, and I'm going to have counsel explain the bill, and I'm going to poll the committee to see if they want any further invited testimony, 5 minutes per side, on the bill and the appropriate amendment. So let's listen to counsel, then I'll poll whomever is here to see if we want the invited testimony or whether we should just crank right through the work session. Counsel?
Chair Ackerman, members of the committee, House Bill 2285 requires the Health Professional Regulatory Board, upon request from a licensee who has received a notice of an intent to impose disciplinary actions, to disclose all information obtained by the board in its investigation of the disciplinary actions. It provides an exception for the information that is privileged or confidential under the laws. I just want to make a note. We had a public hearing on House Bill 2285, I think it was last week, regarding the Dash-Through amendments. It was a recusal issue. That is not a part of these amendments, and it's not a part of the issues going forward today, just to put that out there. You have before you Dash-4 amendments. Those Dash-4 amendments make one further change to the Dash-1 amendments that I just described. Those amendments provide that a regulatory board may withhold information regarding the identity of persons who have made complaints and will not testify at any hearing arising out of the investigation. This amendment basically it further limits what information a licensing board must disclose to a licensee when the licensee requests that information. I believe these amendments came up as in order to relieve some concerns about the chilling effect that disclosure laws may have on persons who are making complaints about licensees. Again, this amendment would provide that the board would not have to disclose the identity of such a person unless that person would be testifying at a subsequent hearing.
Counsel, what amendments then are relevant? The Dash-4s?
Those are the Dash-4s are the relevant amendments.
That's the only thing before us then?
That's the only thing before you.
Okay. Is the committee informed as to what the board, the Dash-4s attempt to accomplish? Do we need any further explanation? And then I'm going to poll the board to see if you feel there's a need for invited testimony from an agency representative and a state bar representative. 5 minutes each would be my parameters if the board wants to go to invited testimony or the committee wants to go to invited testimony. President Garrard, do you want to hear more testimony on the Dash-4 amendments?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes, okay. I'm in accord with that. So on the invited testimony, again, one agency representative, 5 minutes, one Oregon State Bar representative, 5 minutes. And I'm limiting it to that extent because we have, this bill has been to us several times, and I think we're very well acquainted with the bill and the import of the Dash-4 amendments. So we'll have the agency representatives go first, of course.
Good morning, Chair Ackerman, members of the committee. My name is Kathleen Haley, and I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Board of Medical Examiners. The prepared written testimony that I brought down was on the Dash-2s. I got a copy of the Dash-4s this morning, but I will speak to the Dash-4s as well. The Oregon Board of Medical Examiners today does wish to restate that it opposes House Bill 2285, both in its original form and in the Dash-2s and Dash-4 amendments. The other state health licensing boards also continue to oppose House Bill 2285, and those are the Clinical Social Workers, Board of Dentistry, Mortuary and Cemetery, Naturopathic, Nursing Home Administrators, Occupational Therapy, Pharmacy, Physical Therapists, Speech-Language Pathology and Audiology Therapy, and Veterinary. I have also been authorized to report that the governor remains significantly concerned about House Bill 2285. The mission of Oregon's citizen health licensing boards is to protect the public from poor health care practice. We continue to oppose House Bill 2285 because this measure would make it even more difficult for us to achieve our mission. And the ways in which it would make it more difficult are that it would make it more adversarial, more time-consuming, and add significant cost. Remember that administrative law is designed to streamline legal processes. The rules of evidence are relaxed. The purpose is not to obtain finances for someone. It is not to prosecute someone. The purpose is to fulfill the mission, and in the case of health regulatory boards, that is to protect Oregon's citizens. And given that it's health care that it's involved, it's Oregon's most vulnerable citizens. We want to reiterate the following key points on why we oppose this bill. It would continue to have a chilling effect on persons' willingness to step forward and make complaints to the board. Because the existing law, Oregon Revised Statute 676, allow that any information that would permit any identification of the complainant is protected. This bill doesn't go that far. So it doesn't take care of that issue of complainants being reluctant to step forward. In the healthcare community, there is a reluctance, particularly in rural Oregon, where people know one another very well. And for a nurse to come and complain about a physician takes a lot of courage. And the first thing they want to know is my confidentiality guaranteed? This bill takes that away. In the case of sexual misconduct and assault victims, in administrative law, they are not given special protections or appointed advocates as they are in other areas of the law, like the criminal law. The board also regularly works with criminal justice agencies on joint investigations. If the board cannot assure confidentiality to those law enforcement agencies, they are not going to work with us to turn over reciprocal information. Such investigations include major fraud cases as well as cases of sexual misconduct. Therefore, the promise of confidentiality is a key factor in persuading licensees and members of the public to step forward and report to the board. The board is already required to disclose information we're going to use in making its decisions, and that's what the board does. At the time of a contested case hearing, our assistant attorney general turns over those exhibits that the board is going to rely on in its case. This opens up the agency's entire file, including the investigative reports. Then the issue becomes, why did an investigator do one action rather than another, rather than concentrating on the behavior of the licensee, which is the real issue in question? It also will add significant time because the board's going to have its legal counsel go through what is sometimes boxes and boxes of case materials to redact that information that is exempted by this bill, the privileged and confidential information, as well as the name of the complainant. This will add significant expense because we are going to have our assistant attorney general go through all those files and take all that information out. And literally, it is boxes of case files in some cases. Therefore, the board respectfully urges you, along with the other health licensing boards, urging you to consider the negative impacts of additional adversarial process, more time-consuming, and significantly more expensive. We urge you to vote no on this bill. Thank you very much, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, and you're right at 5 minutes. That's great. Thank you. I think we'll hold the questions until we have the other witness testify. You may proceed.
Thank you very much, Chair Ackerman. Members of the committee, my name is Thomas Doyle. I'm an attorney from Portland, working with the firm of Bennett Hartman. I represent nurses and other licensees in public matters throughout the state. My practice is primarily administrative law, primarily representing individuals who have licenses who are at who are facing discipline. The amendments that we're speaking to here are the Dash 4s. Simply provide some fundamental fairness. What we're talking about is a situation where an individual whose livelihood is at stake, whose license is in jeopardy, they are facing basically a prosecution. It is an adversarial process. There is an assistant attorney general who is there prosecuting a case against an individual based upon allegations of misconduct. It's a contested case hearing. We have an administrative law judge We have all the trappings of evidentiary rules there. What we don't have at this point is access to statements by the very people who are accusing the individual of the wrongdoing. So what we have is basically a violation of fundamental fairness. These amendments provide for some leveling of that playing field. What we have is a situation where I've actually been in hearings where the Assistant Attorney General says, well, we've given you everything that we think supports our case. Then the obvious question is, do you have anything else? Yes, we absolutely have other things. We have other documents. We have other investigatory materials. We have witness statements from many other different individuals. But we don't think that supports our case, so we're not going to give access to you. That is, on its face, a violation of what I think is what every individual is entitled to as a matter of their livelihood, as a matter of their license. We're entitled to see what it is that went into the findings of probable cause. This doesn't open the door. This doesn't open the door before the notice is issued, but after that notice is issued, after the agency decides that we're going to proceed with a case against this individual, the individual gets to see what was involved with that that decision to prosecute, and more importantly, the statements of individuals that were obtained as part of that investigation. I've actually been in situations where the Assistant Attorney General has decided to introduce the documents in rebuttal that were withheld. So the position there is, well, we didn't think it supported our case, but now that we heard your case, we've decided that these other documents that we've been withholding support our case now, so therefore we are going to introduce them. It limits the ability to cross-examine witnesses. It limits the ability to prepare a case. I've been in two cases where administrative law judges have sided with our position on this. Both times the Board of Nursing has overruled those administrative law judges, has said, no, we don't feel that we want to give you access to the information that we have relating to this case. These amendments provide limitations. Their confidentiality will be maintained. This is only giving access to the individual who's being charged. I think that's extremely important. These amendments provide fairness for the licensee whose livelihood is at stake, are absolutely vital to maintain a fair playing field, and I urge support. Open for questions.
Thank you very much. Thank you're right on 5 minutes, too. We appreciate that. Let me ask one question of each of you with respect to the Dash 4 amendments. We're dealing with a situation where the regulatory board has issued a notice of intent to impose disciplinary action and requiring the board to disclose everything except that which is privileged or confidential under law and the identity of any person who has made a complaint about the licensee or applicant who will not testify in any hearing. Does that, in your opinion, protect the persons that would otherwise complain to the board but would not be a part of the proceeding? Is their confidentiality preserved?
I believe, if you may ask that, answer that question.
It goes to each of you, so.
Okay. I'd be glad to answer that first. I think it does. I think what these amendments provide is that the licensee who's being charged gets to have the statements and the identity of the people who are going to be testifying against them. Individuals who are not going to be testifying, who made complaints but are not testifying, are clearly protected under this amendment.
Ms. Haley?
Chair Ackerman, I respectfully disagree. The existing statute, ORS 676.175, says the information permitting the identification of the complainant. If you have a record that says Nurse Jones, and you take out Jones, the physician still knows that it's a nurse. Or if in the case of a sexual misconduct complaint, it identifies everything about the complainant, or the assuming they're the same victim and the complainant, all that identifying information is still there. We're just taking out the name, and it doesn't go far enough.
Okay. Questions from the committee? Ms. Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can be Ms. thank you. A question to both of you. Ms. Healy, in your example of perhaps just redacting a name but not a description or a modifier, is it not possible that that information could be more thoroughly shielded by virtue of how the information is dealt with in a written document? In other words, Nurse Jones, it could be Nurse and Jones could be blacked out.
Chair Ackerman, Representative Flores, if that was in the statute, if the language was the same as in existing law, then it would take care of that issue.
I see.
Further questions? Yes, Representative Garrard.
Again, a question for both of you. An accusation made by an anonymous source still has to be proven, doesn't it?
Representative Garrard, absolutely. That they have to be able to prove if it's made by an anonymous source. So you have an anonymous source that says individual nurse or individual doctor did X. Then it's up to the board to muster the evidence that would support that case. If it's an anonymous source, they are not going to have that individual testifying. That's going to be a complaint from an individual, and it's not going to be, if it's anonymous, they're not going to have someone with a brown paper bag over their face. They're going to have to support that charge through other evidence. Absolutely. All that this bill does is lets us see that other evidence that they obtained in looking at that anonymous source.
Follow, Mr. Chair. Okay, here's where you're losing me. You get to see the evidence. The only thing the confidentiality covers is the person who presented the evidence, correct?
Under this bill, as it stands now, let me answer it this way. As it stands now, where you have an anonymous source, we do not have access to anything other than what's introduced. Under this bill, where there's an anonymous source and there's investigation done, well, the confidentiality protects the identity of the anonymous source and identifying information. And I think that's, Representative Flores' question, identifying information relating to that source, if there is identifying information. But in terms of what we have access to under this bill, we have access to the investigation that's done as part of the complaint process, so that as part of the process where the board determines to proceed with an action. That is what this bill provides, is access to that investigation. That may or may not be used to support the charges. You can envision a situation where an anonymous source comes in. They talk to 10 people about the incident. Let's say it's a nurse and we have an incident that happened at the hospital. They talk to the 10 other nurses on the floor at the time. They find one nurse who says it happened and 9 nurses who say it didn't happen. Well, at this point, they're going to present that one nurse that says it did happen, and we don't even know that those other 9 nurses are out there. We don't even know what they said in their interviews. We don't have access to that right now. And what this bill provides is, if there are witness statements of those 9 nurses saying, no, I was standing right there, and I know that that did not happen, we get access to that. We don't have that right now. Any mitigating evidence that's produced in the investigation, by definition, does not support the board's case, and therefore, by definition, is not being provided as part of what is being called at this point discovery. I'm an attorney by any scope of imagination or any stretch of imagination. It's not really discovery. It's basically being provided the evidence that supports the case. This bill changes that.
Chair Ackerman, Representative Garrard, we don't take anonymous complaints. We do thorough investigations, and the licensees have the opportunity to do thorough investigations as well, and they do. And they may be having an evaluation done by a psychiatrist or someone who assesses their competency that we have no knowledge of and no access to. In the case of the Board of Medical Examiners, we bring 50 notices of complaint of intent to take disciplinary action a year. 50 cases. So in 50 cases, we're going to have to go through each one, all the patient records, and redact this information. This is a significant time and expense to the health regulatory boards.
Thank you. Okay, further questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
the concern about there being identifying information that is other than just the name, say because the function or title of the individual, could that be solved? Let me put this question to Ms. Haley. If the, in the dash fours, the phrase "the identity of any person" were changed to "the identifying information with respect to any person," so that if it were a nurse, that could be redacted. I mean, recognizing you have other concerns mm-hmm. about the process, but would that address the concern about there being ways of identifying who that complainant was if the language were expanded in that way?
Chair Ekman, Representative McPherson, I think expanding that definition could take care of that issue of identifying the complainant. It doesn't take care of the cost and time involved.
Sure. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee? Okay. Hearing none, you're excused. And thank you very much for your testimony this morning.
Thank you very much.
We'll proceed to the dash four amendments, and the chair will move that the dash four amendments be incorporated within House Bill 2285. Is there discussion? Hearing none, that's allowed. Chair will move that House Bill 2285 as amended be forwarded to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion from the committee? Hearing no discussion, the clerk may call the roll.
Mr. Chair. As a 40-year member of the news media, I understand the value of confidentiality, so I'm going to have to oppose this bill.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I will make a comment that if this bill, I will give a courtesy vote to the full committee and would hope that perhaps the modest insertion of language in the dash or the bill at the section that Representative McPherson suggested would be addressed in the Senate side, I think.
I appreciate
would
that.
Go a long way to preserving that confidentiality.
I think that would be helpful. Thank you. Further discussion? Hearing none, then the clerk may call a roll.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Berard?
No.
Representative Worth, excused or absent?
Absent.
Thank you. And Chair Ekman?
Aye. House Bill 2285, as amended, is forwarded to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. I'll carry the bill. We'll ask counsel to prepare the anticipated amendment according to Representative McPherson's concern. And with that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2285. I believe we have Senator Nelson here, and he has an interest in Senate Bill 355, is that correct, counsel? I'll call that bill next and open a public hearing on that bill and have counsel explain it to us.
Chair Ekman, members of the subcommittee, Senate Bill 355A has to do with licensing of charitable gaming. Under current law, the Department of Justice may issue a license to a tax-exempt charitable organization to conduct a bingo operation, but it is only limited to one county that the charitable organization may conduct such gaming. And this measure would allow the licensing of gaming in more than one county. It would be limited to no more than three counties, and there would be requirements. The requirements would be so long as that the gaming is conducted at a location where the organization regularly conducts charitable activities, and so long as the organization has a cumulative and annual handle of no more than $250,000. Handle, by the way, is a term of art that is already defined in the statute and is applicable in this context. That means the total value of the money bet on the game. This is limited to bingo operations. The original bill would have applied to bingo, lotto, or Monte Carlo events, but the Senate amendments narrowed the scope to bingo only.
Thank you. Senator, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate
the opportunity to testify before you. My name is David Nelson. I'm a state senator. I represent four counties in eastern Oregon, Morrow County, Umatilla County, Union, and Wallowa County. And this bill was brought to me from folks in Union, and who also have it's a charitable nonprofit, and they call it Community Connections of Northeast Oregon. They cover two or three counties up there. What they've done is they have these bingo games, and they found that they were actually in violation of the law. The Department of Justice gave them notice that they were actually issued two licenses, and they should have only been issued one. So this is what this is taking care of. We work very closely with Ross Laburn in the Department of Justice and Assistant Attorney General's office, and came up with these amendments, and I think that they cover the issue very well. We did add one in at his request, is that in these bingo games, sometimes now they use electronically held bingo cards. And there was sort of a loose definition of what a gray machine was, but this bill also, it takes care of this this new type of playing bingo. And you know, our people out there in Eastern Oregon, they like to play bingo. So I would appreciate your consideration and would answer any questions that you might have. And Mr. Laybourne is in the audience. If you wish to hear any testimony from the Attorney General's office.
Let's see if there's any questions of you first. Representative Girard?
Good morning, Senator. Good morning. In my county, our senior citizen center runs weekly bingo, and it's a very big fundraising source for the senior programs in my area. What, under this bill, what would prevent someone from anywhere else in the state coming down and running bingo in my county and going in competition with my senior center?
Well, this is a non-profit. I suppose a non-profit could, but, I mean, this is limited to non-profit organizations. You couldn't bring a for-profit type outfit in here. This is very narrowly drawn, as I understand it. Maybe Mr. Laybourne could expand on that a little bit if that doesn't answer your question. But I just don't see that there would be any competition that would come in.
Okay, further questions of the senator? If not, you're excused. Thank you, Senator. Okay, and I'll call up the remaining two witnesses, Jacqueline Zimmer and Ross Laybourne.
Thank you.
Like to come forward, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jacqueline Zimmer. I'm with the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities, and this particular bill comes from our Area Agency on Aging office down in Northeast Oregon. So we just wanted to thank Senator Nelson for working to get this bill passed for us. It does generate a significant revenue for our Meals on Wheels programs, among other things, in that particular area. So I don't have much to add to the testimony other than to thank Senator Nelson. But and then I think I was going to attempt to answer your question, but it looks like we have a certified smart person here. So maybe I will defer to him and just be available for other questions if there are some. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Laybourne?
Chair Ackerman, members of the committee, my name is Ross Laybourne. I'm an assistant attorney general. I also serve as attorney in charge of the department's charitable activities section, which carries out the attorney general's functions to provide the licensing and oversight of charitable gaming in the state. And in addition to raffles in Monte Carlo, that includes the oversight and licensing of bingo. I think that Senator Nelson properly covered the two issues, and I also have written testimony which does as well. We were concerned about the original language as this bill was originally drafted, in part, I think, because of the question that Representative Girard raised, because it seemed like that one of the historic constraints on bingo operations, both in terms of size and in location around the state. We have a number of requirements. In the current law, you can't operate bingo more than 3 days or 15 hours a week, and of course one of the other historic constraints was operating in one county. But I think that the way that the language has evolved in Senate Bill 355 in the A and Gross version, we tried to address your concern by doing two things. One, saying that You can't go begin a bingo game in another county unless you actually have program service in that county. So I think the more likely scenario would be what we've seen is in the past is sometimes organizations that have a program in one county but deciding that maybe they could go to a different county and have more success opening a bingo game. Here it contemplates that you have to have a bona fide program service not only in the county but at the same location that you're going to play bingo. Secondly, from the standpoint of, if you will, organizations trying to kind of cherry pick the bingo market, we think that we've also in part dealt with that in terms of the $250,000 constraint. Now that may seem like a lot of money, but we've got four classes of bingo right now, running from Class A down to D. Class A are those organizations that are playing with a handle of more than $250,000, and keep in mind that's at a single location. So those organizations, by definition, would not have the opportunity to go to the other county. It would only be the Class B, C, and D organizations. And I think that when you talk about a cumulative handle of $250,000, there's probably just not enough money involved for organizations to want to go relocate and add additional games elsewhere.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee to the panel? Okay, seeing none. You're excused. Thank you for your testimony this morning. Are there any further witnesses on Senate Bill 355? Please come forward. Seeing none, then I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 355. If I can't go into work session, I've lost a quorum. We'll see if we can find our defining member. Okay, I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 355. I have a motion from the committee. Representative Flores.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 355 to the full committee with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Flores moves that Senate Bill 355 be forwarded to the full committee with a do-pass recommendation. Is there discussion from the committee? Hearing none, the clerk may call the roll.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Wood, Chair
Azerman? Aye. Senate Bill 355A is forwarded to the full committee with a do-pass recommendation. Ms. Representative Flores will be the carrier, and I'll conclude the work session on Senate Bill 355A. We have a staff member from Senator Moniz Anderson's office, and I think she'd like to get back to the Senate side. So I'm going to jump ahead and open a public hearing on her bill, which I believe is Senate Bill 599A. Good morning. Council will explain the bill first.
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 599A, as you said, comes to you from Senator Moniz Anderson's office. Requires the court to dismiss a charge of failing to carry proof of insurance if the person charged delivers to the clerk of the court proof of insurance showing that the driver was insured at the time of the offense.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Michelle Russell, and I'm from Multnomah County and Senator Lori Moniz Anderson's office. We always hear about how full and expensive the court system is, and the changes proposed in Senate Bill 599A could save court costs, police overtime costs, and help citizens from missing work or family duties. As explained, Senate Bill 599A requires courts to dismiss failure to carry proof of insurance charge if the individual delivers proof of compliance to the court before the arraignment date. It decreases police officer court time, alleviates undue hardship on individuals that don't live near the city or county where they receive their citation. There's really no need to pay officers to sit in court for a citation that will likely be dismissed, and the court will receive no monetary benefits. It does not exempt uninsured drivers, nor does it encourage people to drive without insurance. They're still held to the same requirements of the law. These tickets are expensive and should not be held against someone who's purchased insurance but cannot find it at the time of citation. Yes, it did happen to me. Allowing an individual who was insured at the time of citation to turn in proof of insurance takes a portion of these people out of the process early. Thank you for your time. I hope you'll vote in favor of 599A.
Thank you very much. Are there questions from the committee? There's another situation, is there not, counsel, where if you don't have a driver's license on you and when you're stopped and you get a ticket for not having a license, you can produce a license before the hearing and get the case dismissed. I mean, we have an analogous situation here.
Mr. Chairman of the committee, I don't know. I've been stopped, but I always have my license with me. Joe, do you have any?
Chair Ackerman, I'm not having practice criminal defense in Multnomah County. I'm not familiar with such a rule. Not to say there's not one. There may be a local practice in individual counties of that.
I think it's in the statute. I just wanted to say that this just appears to be an analogous situation where there's a technical violation, but you really are covered and you can go in and get the thing dismissed before the court appearance. I think it's the savings of time and it's a good bill. Okay, further discussion from the committee. Thank you again for your testimony.
Thank you, sir.
And do we have any further witnesses to testify on Senate Bill 599? Seeing none, then I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 599 and open a work session on Senate Bill 599. Do I have a motion? Representative Girard.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 599A to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
President Girard moves Senate Bill 599A to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, clerk may call the roll.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Girard?
Aye.
Representative
Ackerman? Aye. Senate Bill 599A is forwarded to the full committee with a due pass recommendation with Representative Girard as the carrier. And the work session on Senate Bill 599A is concluded. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman of the committee, did you say Senator, Representative Flores is the carrier?
Representative Garrard?
Garrard, okay. Thank you. I'm sorry.
I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 284.
Chair Ackerman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 284 was before the Civil Subcommittee last week on the 23rd. It was passed to the full committee and heard on Friday the 27th. And at that, this is the bill that would extend the statute of civil statute of limitations in circumstances where the attorney representing the party passes away before the period of time expires. It would extend it by 6 months. At the full committee, Representative Ackerman pointed out that under the language of Representative McPherson pointed out that under the language of the bill that it could be read to actually shorten the statute of limitations if, for example, the statute was a three-year statute and it was only 1 year in and all the other prerequisites of the bill were met and the attorney dies, it could be read that the statute is only extended 6 months after the death of the attorney. So there is a dash one amendment that is in your packet that is intended to address that issue. And what it does is it clarifies that if the other conditions are met under the bill, that the action must be commenced either within 6 months of the attorney's death or within the time that is applicable under the appropriate statute of limitations, specifying that whichever is later is the time period that applies. So I believe that that accomplishes the fix to Representative Ackerman's, Representative McPherson's. I didn't even stay up late with you guys last night. I apologize. Concern.
Thank you, counsel. President McPherson?
No, this looks fine. I reviewed it in advance, and I think it does the job.
Fine. Thank you. I'm missing a quorum member until Representative Girard gets back, so we'll just stand at ease for a couple of minutes. And mm-hmm. You're out of order. The chair will move to incorporate the Dash 1 amendment into Senate Bill 284. Is there any objection? Hearing none, that's allowed. The chair will move that Senate Bill 284, as amended, be afforded to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on the bill? Seeing none, clerk may call the roll.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative
Horst
Hansen? Chair Ackerman?
Aye. Senate Bill 284A is forwarded to the full committee for due pass recommendation, and I will carry the bill. And the work session on that bill is now concluded.
We do. No one has signed up for 332. I can explain that pretty quickly, but I think we'll have to have somebody coming out with 368.
So do 368. Is that going to take a long time?
Yeah. Nobody signed up for that one either, but may as well do it.
For 368, nobody signed up for it. Which one are you going to do first?
368.
Okay. I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 368. Council?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 368 is sponsored by Senator Deckard and Representative Garrard, and it what we have before you is the Dash 3 amendments, A3 amendments, which replace the bill. You may wonder why we are replacing a bill at such a late date. After the bill passed out of the Senate, Ted Hughes, who is here to testify, sent a copy of the bill to his counsel for the motion picture industry, I believe, down in Los Angeles, and I had conversations with them. And one of the things that they pointed out, that they were concerned that with the original bill, we may have been encroaching upon federal copyright law. And also were concerned that the bill as originally drafted may not as well address what they were intending to reach as the amended version. And the crux of this whole bill is in Section 1, which is new. A person commits a crime of unlawful operation of audiovisual device if the person knowingly operates the audiovisual recording function of any device in a motion picture theater while a motion picture is being exhibited without the written consent of the motion picture theater owner. Mr. Chairman of the Committee, with the advent of new technology, there are people who go into the movie theater with their camcorder or whatever and record the movie and then produce it in a disc and copy the disc and sell it. And that's what this is intended to prevent. And it's not going at the issue of the copying because that has copyright implications, but the operation of the audiovisual recording functions, Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you. I have no witnesses signed up for that. I do have a witness. Okay, please come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wish I was a little speedier. I wish that more than you do. Good morning. This is Ted Hughes representing the Motion Picture Association of America. This bill is an important bill for the movie producers. This pirating and counterfeiting is becoming of tremendous magnitude. The Motion Picture Association chose 17 states in the United States to introduce this bill this session. Oregon is one of them. And Oregon is an important movie-making state. We do roughly, the motion picture industry does roughly $50 million a year. That's on an average. And about 2,000 employees are involved each year in movie-making. For that reason, they wanted Oregon to be one of these states. Your council has covered why the bill is here and what it attempts to solve. The Dash 3 amendments are important for for another reason. There was an organization in headquartered here in Salem that I did not know about when the bill passed the Senate. I received some calls from them. There's a club here. The members buy DVD, and the members have a lending library. They buy DVDs. They send them back to Utah for sanitizing, and they are sanitized and sent back to the club, and they have a library for the members of this organization to check out sanitized movies. It was not our intent to interfere with that, and so Dash 3 was also put together with them in mind so that we redrafted the bill so that they wouldn't be caught swept up in this thing. And rightfully so, I believe. So, any more, you don't need any more from me after last night. And none of you have nodded off. I've been watching that this morning. None of you have nodded off from last night. I'm proud of you. I would ask that you adopt the Dash 3 amendments and pass the bill to the full committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Are there questions from the committee? Yes, Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hughes, now, counsel indicated this dealt with camcorder devices. Does this also address cell phones that can have the same capability to record?
I think your counsel discussed that with us.
Jim Rivers, Committee Representative Flores. I'm probably behind in my terminology as it relates to technology here, but on line 6 it says audiovisual device.
Right.
And I believe, Madam
Chair, Representative considered
Flores, that would include a cell phone that would, if it were capable of doing the whole movie, sure, or even part of it.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee?
Chair, members of the committee, if yes. I could probably elaborate a little bit on what Mr. Hughes mentioned about the local provider. And it, that was a gentleman named Brian Decker who I talked to. And actually, if you look at the original bill, his problem was on lines 12 through 14, knowingly sells or offers for sale any audiovisual recording that has been produced without the written consent of the owner of the motion picture imprinted. Ironically, because of technology, the current language talks about videotape. Now, we're going back. This bill does not amend this particular section. The amendment negates that. So we will go back to the law as it stands now. We will not amend RS-164-875. His problem was that they do discs, so an audiovisual recording. If this bill had been enacted in the A form, when they sanitize the disc, they do it as an audiovisual recording. However, they don't do videotapes. So he would be, even though you could not do that with a videotape, he doesn't have a problem because he doesn't use videotapes, they use discs. So that's how we have he drafted around that particular problem.
Thank you, counsel. Are there further questions of counsel or of Mr. Hughes? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. Any further witnesses on Senate Bill 368? Yes, Representative
Chair, Flores. Just comment that I just noted under Section 3, subparagraph 1, that it does address any recording or transmitting of a motion picture by means of any technology now known or later developed. So that is catching up with technology. So.
Okay. Thank you for that. Further discussion? Okay. I will therefore conclude the public hearing on Senate Bill 368A and open a work session on Senate Bill 368A. Representative Girard.
Mr. Chair, I would move the Dash 3s to Senate Bill 368A.
Representative Girard moves that the Dash 3 amendments be incorporated within Senate Bill 368. Is there any discussion? Any objection? That's allowed. The motion, please, Representative Girard.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 368A as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Girard moves that Senate Bill 368A be forwarded to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion on the motion? Clerk, may I call the roll?
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Wisconsin, Chair Ackerman?
Aye. Senate Bill 368A then is forwarded to the full committee with a due pass recommendation, and the work session on that bill is concluded. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 332.
Chair Ackerman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 332 is a Judiciary Committee bill that would extend physician-patient privilege to communications between patients and dentists. The way this came about is that the law of privilege is under Oregon law is a creature of the Oregon Evidence Code, and the section that applies to physician-patient privilege gives a patient the privilege to refuse to disclose and to prevent any other person from disclosing confidential communications in the course of a civil action, a suit, or a proceeding if those communications were made for purposes of diagnosis or treatment of the patient's physical condition. The definition of physician under the rule of evidence includes a person licensed to practice medicine, a certified naturopathic doctor, certified chiropractic physician as well. This measure would add to that definition of physician, dentists, for purposes of physician-patient privilege. The testimony, I note that no one has signed up on the bill, so if, with permission of the chair, I'll provide a little bit more background. The testimony on the Senate side consisted of Dr. Robert Staley, who is a doctor of dental surgery and also an attorney, and he provided the committee with his patient information background sheet, something that he has somebody fill out sort of as an intake device to get more background on them. He pointed out that the questions that are on his intake information sheet includes whether or not the person is taking any medication, whether or not the person uses tobacco, whether or not the person is HIV positive, whether or not the person is pregnant. And he pointed out that all of these questions he would consider to be confidential, but because the current physician-patient privilege statute does not specifically include dentists, he pointed out that these could be things that could come into evidence in a civil proceeding for which the patient could not assert physician-patient privilege unless the statute were amended in the respect that this measure offers to include dentists within the definition of physician. The measure did pass the Senate unanimously, and the effective date of the statute would be the first of the year.
Thank you, Council. Questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair, I just a question for counsel. I'm trying to sort this out in my own mind. There's an ethical duty of confidentiality, I imagine, that exists regardless of what's in statute, maybe under common law or maybe elsewhere in statute, just as any of the learned professions owe a duty of confidentiality. And so what we're dealing with here is the evidentiary privilege because, in effect, that ethical duty could be impaired by being subpoenaed or otherwise called to give evidence. Is that what's going on here?
Chair Ackerman, Representative McPherson, I believe that's accurate, yes.
Was there any indication on the Senate side that anybody had ever been called as a witness to give this kind of information?
Chair Ackerman, Representative McPherson, there was no such assertion made on the Senate side.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair, that was my question. Your last question, Representative McPherson. What kind of issue are we looking at in the big picture? Obviously, we're thinking preemptively here.
Chair Ackerman, Representative Flores, I believe that is accurate. There was no testimony as to an anecdotal this is what happened in this case, so this is why we have to do this. I think that Dr. Staley, my recollection of Dr. Staley's testimony was that he has this information, and right now he knows that there is no evidentiary protection to it, and he felt it important that that protection exists, should exist.
The thing I can add, Representative, is that I've had some discussions, not on this bill, but in just in private, when I was in private practice and discussing it with insurance defense attorneys, and they would tell me they would issue just blanket subpoenas to all health providers and hospitals in the area, not thinking about dentists necessarily, but to try to find out any information which would be, try to impeach the plaintiff or something of that nature. So what they're looking for is something here where perhaps somebody would reveal they have a pre-existing problem that would be related to their personal injury case, which they had not disclosed under oath, and be an impeachment process. Mm-hmm. Now, no one's ever said to me that they ever started subpoenaing dental records, but I know that they'd issue subpoenas to hospitals just on fishing expeditions sometimes to see if they can pull up something. And as you know, how well that... how important impeachment is to your defense of your case. So I think there's some questions here that on these intake forms that would be relevant in many, many instances. That's the only thing I can add to it. Okay, further discussion from the committee? There's no one here to testify and no one that will testify, and we have a dwindling audience and it's getting late in the morning. So I'll conclude the public hearing on Senate Bill 332 and open a work session on Senate Bill 332. The chair will move that Senate Bill 332 be forwarded to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. For discussion from the committee, hearing none, the clerk may call the roll.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Flores absent. Chair Ackerman?
Aye. Senate Bill 332 is forwarded to the full committee with a due pass recommendation, and I will carry the bill and conclude the work session on on Senate Bill 332. I think there's one item left. Is that right, Council? Senate Bill 106. Would you like to explain the procedure we're going to go through?
Chair Ackerman, members of the committee, you'll recall Senate Bill 106 is the governor's elder abuse bill. It is before you on motion to reconsider as a result of the realization that there is a bill on that originated out of the House that has already passed through the House and is past the Senate Judiciary and is before the full Senate, House Bill 2415, that accomplishes one discrete piece of Senate Bill 106A. So there is a -7 amendment that would be before you that would delete the portions of Senate Bill 106 that are wholly completed by House Bill 2415. The sections that are being deleted from 106 and that are in 2415 is the section that relates to intestate succession with respect to an abuser of an elderly or disabled person. It prevents the passage or transfer of property to someone who has committed abuse of an elderly person, either physical, sexual, or financial abuse, within 5 years of the decedent's passing.
I think, Council, that we passed a similar bill out, and it's now up for consideration on the Senate floor, having passed the Senate committee. The governor's bill came over and has the identical piece in it, so at the end of this process, we'll take out that identical piece and allow the Senate to proceed on our bill. I think that's the short answer, but we have to go through the process, so the first thing I'd like to do then is move that the rules be suspended for the purposes of reconsidering our vote on Senate Bill 106A. But before I answer that, Council, I have a question whether this is a subcommittee function or function of the full committee.
Chair Ackerman, I consulted with Bill Taylor and with Patsy Wood on this issue, I also consulted with Chair Krieger on this issue. All of them indicated that this would be the appropriate procedure to add this amendment in the subcommittee and then present this amendment as well as the other two amendments that the subcommittee passed yesterday all in one. It'll be a combination of all three of these elements to the full committee on Friday.
Okay, then I have made the motion to suspend the rules. This motion is undebatable. those of you who are of the opinion that the rules be suspended for the purposes of reconsidering the vote on Senate Bill 106 will say aye, and those opposed, no. Those in favor, chair votes aye.
Aye.
It's unanimous, and the motion carries, and the rules have been suspended. I therefore move that we reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 106A was sent to the full committee to pass as amended. Is there any discussion? Those of the opinion that we should reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 106A was sent to the full committee to pass as amended will say aye. Those opposed, no. Aye for the chair. President Garrard.
Aye.
President Flores.
Aye.
The motion carries, and the vote has been reconsidered. Chair moves that we adopt the A7 amendments to Senate Bill 106A, and it be sent to the full committee with a due pass as amended recommendation. Any discussion? Hearing none, those of the opinion that we should adopt the A7 amendments to Senate Bill 106A, and that it be sent to the full committee with a due pass as amended recommendation, shall say aye. Those against shall say no. Chair votes aye.
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 The motion carries. I will carry the process to the full committee, and that will conclude our action on Senate Bill 106A. Thank you. Is there further business of the committee this morning? Seeing none, we're adjourned.